Weekend Breakfast
with Refilwe Mpakanyane
on 702 for the curious.
Ms. Kholeng, welcome to Weekend Breakfast. I hope you're well. Enough.
Welcome back, Refilwe. I am well, thank you. Yeah, and keep on keeping on, you know?
We must. We have to. Thank you so much, Karabo. And it's always so lovely to round off the show as we talk all things books and books related. I'm going to give you a bit of a share once we're done talking about this book. The one book that I spent this week reading and was slightly underwhelmed by, but still sort of enjoyed just the easy sort of offhand way of just, you know, numbing the brain a little bit as opposed to streaming stuff endlessly online. But I'll tell you a little bit more about the latest Kevin Kwan book. So you're taking a look at A Niger Saudi Affair for us by Lerato Charlotte Litsoso. Talk to me about that.
All right. Well, you know, if you're an Anglophile, you like things that are English. If you're a Francophile, you like things that are French. If you're an Indophile, you like things that are Indian. I'm a Nigerphile. I don't know if that word exists. But there you go.
It exists now.
Particularly when it comes to literature, yes, and food. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the popular culture, not so much, but I do get the sentiments of the Rands and the Nairas.
Yes.
Just to give you a little bit of context, you know, I'm going to begin with the sort of the serious stuff and then move on to this book, which really comes down to the ground and into an intimate space. But Professor Adeke Adebajo, who's the director for the Institute for Pan-African Thought and Conversation at the University of Johannesburg, wrote a book a few years ago called The Eagle and the Springbok, which is a collection of essays on Nigeria and South Africa. And he looks at the Nigeria-South Africa relations in politics, economics, and culture, using the themes of rivalries and hegemony.
Yes.
And, you know, so you get about, you know, what Nigeria and South Africa account for in terms of Africa's economic might, the conflict management initiatives, which he was a huge part of, because he has a background as, you know, he served on UN missions in various African countries, and he's been an advisor for the AU. So there is that big conversation that 702 landers are very keen on, because we know there's a lot of business interests and political interests in terms of how do we consolidate and how do we build our bilateral relations. So if people want to read something that's more academic, more policy and politics related, I would suggest that book. And then I also read a book also a couple of years back, which was a sort of political satire work by Pius Adetsami called Niger No They Carry Last, which is his vision for, like, Nigeria always comes first. And that is the spirit of competitiveness, right? Yeah. Where, you know, there used to be that joke that if you throw a stone into a crowd of people in Lagos, you're likely to hit someone with a PhD, you know? so also those stereotypes.
I know someone personally, South African, who was had a very tense relationship with the mother of her Nigerian fiance, because according to her Nigerian standards, what is this thing of only having one degree? How dare you?
Yes.
we have mastered the art of having at least three or four apiece, and you come along with your little undergrad. No, my child.
And our undergrads are worse. They're only 3 years. So, you know, the standards are super high.
She was rocking a little certificate there compared to those to the family. Anyway, I interrupted you. Carry on.
No worries. And then in terms of literary excellence, you know, dealing with patriarchy, Nigerian women's writing is bomb. They go head to head with the ogres of the written story. I'm talking Bushie Mesheta, who was, you know, writing from the beginning. Chika Onigwe, Lola Shoneyin, Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie. And Lola Shoneyin's book is coming out as a Netflix production, right? The Secret Lives of Babasegi's Wife. We all know about Chimamanda. Yes, me
Can't
too. Chinelo Okparanda, Ayobami Adebayo, Ijeoma Umedinyo, whose poems we discussed not long ago, Questions for Ada. And this book that I'm about to talk about now, A Niger Saudi Affair by Lerato Charlotte Litsoso, brings us right to the ground in terms of bilateral relations, to the level of personal intimacy between Nigerian men and South African women.
Sure.
Now, I've yet to hear or read of instances of romantic liaisons between South African men and Nigerian women, and I'm going to be controversial here. Perhaps it might be a case of Nigerian men patriarching better.
Maybe a mantle that they don't quite want to claim, but yeah, interesting. I've actually not seen, I don't know if I've seen any instances of that. Quite right, actually, Karabo. Maybe someone can send through an SMS and tell us, well, actually, this is who I am and this is a dynamic in our relationship. 31702, let us know.
Yeah, I mean, when you think about, you know, heteronormative you know, lens, you know, looking at things through a heteronormative lens and the views that we have, you know, Nigerian men are typically tall, dark, muscular, they're big on money. It's a big thing in the culture still that you have to provide. So, you know, the fathers are present, even if they have more than one house, a big house, small house, however many houses. But the father that is not just the head in terms of, you know, positioning or talk, but the power is used materially, right? Mm. It's exercised materially. And, you know, one of the funny things, you know, is like, you know, with South African men and the critiques that we have of that, it's just like in terms of the stereotypes about what masculinity means, especially sure. physically and materially, maybe it's a case that, you know, we subscribe to those stereotypes. And perhaps that's why there's this sense or there's this perception or high visibility of it being Nigerian men and South African women and not the other way around. Mm, well, Lerato unpicks this and also speaks about, you know, apart from the gender stereotyping, she speaks about the social stereotyping, right? This idea that Nigerian men come and take South African women, that South African women are promiscuous, that they're materialistic, they're only after the money, and that they're even willing to, you know, to be complicit in criminal activities just for a quick buck, right? Mm-hmm. Which is a criticism that she sort of, you know, that she unearths and also looks at in terms of how there is this competition. And that, you know, with South African women and the distrust is that you have to be very careful when you have a Nigerian boyfriend because you guys could be living together, you could even get married. And then come the Amber month, when he goes home to bring the money to show that he's doing well in a foreign land.
Explain the Amber month for us.
Honey, you know, it's early in the morning on Saturday, so none of my Niger sisters, my South African sisters, married to Nigerian guys would answer my WhatsApps in the morning because, you know, they're in the family.
Oh, okay.
And Google's not helping.
All right.
The only thing to Amber month I found was like a Facebook group of Nigerian male beauty pageant contestants. But what I presume it to be, right,
yeah.
is that it's a time of the year towards the end of the year where traditionally migrants go home, right? Mm. We do that in South Africa. And in the case of Nigerian sons, it being a very patriarchal society, they're bringing home wealth to show that they're succeeding where they are. And it's also a time for marriage, uh-huh. right? We do our weddings in December as well. So it's time for the big weddings. And what a lot of South African madams or divas in Lerato's book. So Lerato tells the story in a way where there's this Xhosa woman, Twikizwa, who is from Cape Town, and she meets this Nigerian guy who's a student. So they're a young couple, but she's older than him by a few years. Mm-hmm. And he's from Lagos, and he's doing his degree in engineering in Pretoria. And they start this love affair and they move in together, right? And then as a result of them getting together, she becomes initiated into the membership of South African Wives and Girlfriends of Nigerian Men, okay. which is actually a real thing in yes. South Africa. There's even a Facebook group, you know? And talking about, you know, and they provide each other sort of sisterhood. It's sisterhood and competition at the same time in terms of, you know, how do you navigate the things like, you know, learning how to make the food. It's very fussy. How to manage the sort of the family situation and how to make sure that he actually ends up marrying you in Nigeria, not just in South Africa. Sometimes it happens that you get married in South Africa and he gets the residency. And then he goes back to Nigeria and he marries somebody else. Oh, he already has a wife in Nigeria. And this is what actually happens, you know?
Ooh, the hoops that must be jumped through here at home.
Yeah. So that network teaches you how to manage those things, you know, how to, you know, swap your Xhosa outfit for a gele, your Oga's gele. So you're talking about being Oga-fied. Which makes me wonder if Lerato herself hasn't been ogrified because she's based in West Africa and she works in TV and production.
Yes.
So it's a very entertaining novella.
Yes.
And it's written in such a way that it's like Lerato is gossiping with you about Tsikiswa's relationship and heartbreak.
Love
with...
It.
Yes, with Chide, and then how she actually finds true love after Chide breaks her heart with another dude, you mm-hmm. know, who's like a Havuona Olga this time, you know. He does the rings, he's got the money, he's got the man, she's got the, you know. But it's not a shallow book because she speaks the realities, because dating is difficult and finding a marriage where you are safe as a woman, irrespective of which culture you come from, is challenging.
Sure.
You know, we've seen with the Indian matchmaking that's been blowing up and having a lot of sort of conversation around there that, you know, unfortunately in the case of marriage, it's actually, it's a high risk undertaking for women
mm.
more than it is for men. The men, I suppose the risk is on the financial, you know, providing financially and making sure that, that your gonads don't shoot blanks,
mm.
you know? But other than that, it's just the social safety and physical safety and financial stability that women have to worry about. But more the social life or death is huge. Sure. You know, people still there's a lot of currency on that. You know, we may say, I mean, we fight against this as feminists, but we know for a fact that there's certain jobs that you can't get if you're not married. There's certain positions in society, just socially, that you would always be treated differently because there are lots of traditions that just haven't gone away. You know, and that's why the majority of the CEOs and in very rich companies are still married men.
Mm.
It's still how it is, you know.
Mm.
So we go through this this young woman's story of heartbreak and how the sisters are around her, but also how if you break up with your Olga, then you're kicked out of the sisterhood. You know,
of course.
And yes, and also you become the head madam, right? The queen of the hive, as it were. If you give birth to sons. And if you give birth to twin sons, then, like, you're the queen forever. You even get to send around some of the other divas to run your errands for you because he can hook you up with having shops. You have shops here and you have shops in Lagos, you know. And, you know, I don't turn my nose up at the material nature of things because one of the things socially with Nigeria that South Africans must learn quickly, and a lot of my West African friends have said this, is that the sooner Black South Africans realize that when you're born, the government is going to do nothing for you. You have to hustle. And, you know, whether it's through education, and if you choose to be a criminal, you have to deal with the consequences. But once you learn that this world, like, your state doesn't have your back, it's very sad, but this is the reality. We can see it.
Mm.
The sooner you'll pick yourself up and take and go for what you need to go for, right? So this is this very sort of gung-ho, the world is the Wild West for a Black child. It is a kind of attitude and a very enterprising way of looking at life that comes through in a lot of stories and a lot of sort of social interactions that Lerato's protagonist also experiences.
Sure.
And so the story is funny. You learn a lot. I mean, if you don't know much about, you know, Niger living and the culture and the food and the clothing and the aesthetic, you know, in terms of popular aesthetic, you know, this is not a book for people considering themselves to be, you know, hot literature people. You know, it's just a story about like how it is.
You know, this
is what it is.
I hear what you're saying, but sometimes all you're asking for is just to be, for this thing to grab you, to pull you in and just take you on a ride. And then you can just put it down and feel as though for however long it took you to read that book, my goodness, you were in somebody else's life.
Honey, I chuckled. I actually got up early to read it because the novella is short.
Yes.
You know, so from 5 o'clock this morning, I have been in the chuckles. You know, she really takes you within, as the people say, you know,
yes.
Where you're just like, wow. And you don't know whether to trust this man or not. Also, you know, the protagonist, Tsikiswa, is not an angel either. She's
sure.
not.
Yeah.
You know, because she has to fight for what's hers. Because it's also this thing about what I appreciate with these characters is that, in terms of them being real, is that they're not villains and they're not victims either. You know, they experience the consequences of their actions, but they also experience being treated unfairly. That
sure.
you know, love, like everything else in life, is part fortune, a lot of preparation, but also a gamble.
Mm.
You know,
mm.
and you just you know. you do what you can, and she gives us a happy ending, which I need right now, you know?
Which everybody needs, also, my goodness.
Yeah. So, yeah, I really enjoyed this. And even the style was interesting because it was like the author is actually gossiping with you about the other woman's life.
So, Karabo, I might move on to that book right now as I take a break from Sampeter Blanche's Lost in Translation. But that's not the book I wanted to talk to you about. The book that I wanted to talk to you about was the latest Kevin Kwan, Sex and Vanity. He's the guy that wrote Crazy Rich Asians, the book that was turned into the movie. Have you been able to read any of his novels so far?
Mm-mm, no.
You know,
you said Sex and Vanity. What happened?
It feels it's about an Asian American legacy rich young girl, and essentially her journey. It's a building's roman of growing up, dealing with her trauma of being half Chinese and half Caucasian American, and the snobbery, right, that comes with the rich half of the Churchill family looking down at her accomplished or neuroscientist's mother's work and legacy. But, you know, just the sort of social climbing is all, you know, all up in there as per Crazy Rich Asians. But I guess if you've seen the movie, I was a little underwhelmed, and there was a sort of flatness to the characters that I just wished he'd, I don't know what he'd done, but just brought more nuance, more vavavum and oomph versus, I mean, you know, when an author tease up a book that it's all about social climbing, status, money, you know, is family, money and family arguments, and a young girl somewhere in there falling in love and finding love. And he teases it up that way, and he just delivers it to you in that very sort of matter of fact, almost boring way. I read it to the end, but I guess I wanted more. I wanted more of an escape, especially this week, especially because
I'm
the news
so
has not been
sorry.
Good, you know, but yeah,
sorry, but I understand, you know, if you're going to have a diluted character, you better deliver on the plot. You know, then you can be forgiven, or you just take me with you on an insane story.
Yeah.
But I guess, I mean, yeah, you know, there's no accounting for taste, but, you know, I got that sense when I saw all the hype about Crazy Rich Asians, where I was just like, no, like, I need a little bit more depth to this. Because remember that a lot of writers, especially Asian writers, from both the South Asian, especially in the realm of popular writing, right, is that they tend to often fall into the trap of writing for the Western gaze, and the Western gaze in popular art, right, is shallow as anything.
Yeah, and I guess I felt that in some instances of, you know, as you read a book and you feel the narrator explaining this culture to you, right, and your Western gaze. And I felt as though maybe he needed to sort of relax a bit more and ease into this, you know, just be comfortable in this identity and explain less and show more. And we can just do the hard work of, you know, of understanding him. We can just do the hard work of understanding his characters. But at any rate, yeah. It's sure the disappointment, but you know, it's also so interesting now during these lockdown times and these COVID times, you become even more just reticent about which book to pick up, which book to, you know, to put down, because you really need an escape, and that mental real estate is so important, because you're like, I can't mess around with my time or my happiness at this point.
And that's why I'm parking Marachera for Heritage Weekend, end of September. At least it will be warmer physically, you know, the sun will be shining. And for Women's Month, I'm doing a lot of hilarity and stuff because
we need it.
It's a lot.
Yeah,
no, it's a lot. And then, and we need to try and sort of just hold each other up to the light for some time. And I'm happy to do this with you.
All right. Fantastic stuff. Karabo, always a pleasure. Look forward to what you find for us or hold up for us next week, Saturday.
Thank you, Lucide.
All right. That's Ms. Karabo Kholeng, a literary journalist, giving us her take on this, her take on a rather interesting book, A Naija Saudi Affair by Lerato Charlotte Litsoso.